Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Untangling Climate Finance. I'm Jay Tipton, and I'm very amped to have you with me for one more climate finance conversation. Per usual, I'm going to kick off the episode with a listener's review. This one comes from a doctor. Dr. SDJD on Apple Podcasts wrote, "As someone whose work centers extensively around carbon markets, I find this podcast to be extremely well-produced, insightful, and enlightening. Mr. Tipton's obvious knowledge on global warming and the climate crisis, coupled with a host of expert guests, leaves me waiting excitedly for each new episode, and it is especially refreshing to hear about these topics from a financial and market standpoint, subjects which are oft brushed over or forgotten in the climate change discussion." Well, thank you for that, doctor. Very kind words, and it is very much appreciated. Okay, the show must continue. So in this episode, I speak with Max Dubison, the Vice President of Sustainability, Policy, and Engagement at Indigo Ag. Indigo Ag is an ag tech company based in Boston that uses nature and digital technologies to help farmers sustainably feed the planet. They offer a platform that improves crop yield, helps manage farming practices, and facilitates carbon credit generation through environmentally friendly ag projects. In our conversation, Max and I discussed their carbon credit projects and how they're working with farmers in both the US and other countries to make farming practice changes, which in turn create carbon credits, which then in turn provide an additional source of income for the farmers. Now, we all know agriculture is a big deal. Outside of the obvious fact that we all need to eat and a growing population requires more food, ag is also vital to economies, employment, and climate change. There are currently around 1.8 million farms in the US. Ag food and related industries contributes about $1.42 trillion to the US gross domestic product, which is 5.5% of the total GDP. Of that sum, America's farms contribute $223.5 billion, which is nearly 1% of the GDP. And then, ag food and related industries provide a whopping 10% of U.S. employment, with direct on-farm employment making up nearly 2.6 million American jobs. That is 1.2% of total jobs in the states. On the other hand, the U.S. ag sector is responsible for a very large share of total greenhouse gas emissions in the country, equating to about 10.6%. Now, this includes emissions from a variety of sources, such as nitrous oxide from soils, methane from livestock, and carbon dioxide from on-farm energy use. But the U.S. ag sector also plays a significant role as carbon sinks. Improved ag practices such as better soil management and the use of cover crops can enhance the amount of carbon stored in soil and vegetation. In 2021, these practices and land use changes in ag were estimated to offset about 12% of the total U.S. greenhouse gas emissions. Now, this is why the work that Indigo Ag is doing is so important. Farmers need helpful assistance to transition into more sustainable practices, and naturally, some extra money to do so doesn't hurt. Of course, it's not all about the extra cash, because science has shown that by switching to more eco-friendly farming practices, farmers reap other benefits, such as improved soil health, greater water retention, and higher yields. The thing is, some of these benefits aren't realized immediately, which is why additional income from the carbon credits plays a key role in motivating the farmers to stay the course of sustainable practices, which might be tricky to implement at first. So, let's get into the conversation with Max and learn more about what he and Indigo Ag are up to. All right, Max, thank you for joining me on Untangling Climate Finance. I appreciate it. How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. Thanks for having me, Jay.
My pleasure. So before we get into it, why don't we just talk a little bit about you? Give me some background, who you are, where you work. Maybe if you want to go into your education, your work background, that'd be cool too.
Sure. Sounds good. So my name is Max Dubison, Vice President of Sustainability, Policy, and Engagement at Indigo Ag. Grew up in North Carolina, moved to California for a decade or so after college, and then I've been living in Connecticut now since 2013. In terms of my background, kind of always had interest in science and the outdoors. I studied biology in college and then ended up getting a master's degree in corporate environmental management and eco-entrepreneurship. And that really helped kind of set my direction. And I think early on, as I kind of got into environmentalism, environmental movement, sustainability, I realized, at least to me, small individual actions weren't going to be enough to solve, you know, our big, hairy environmental problems like climate change. So I've really been focused on finding ways to kind of change the system from the inside, create incentives to drive environmental benefit kind of within our existing system. So in practice, that's meant carbon markets.
Yeah, it is a big, hairy problem indeed. So all of the small actions add up, but you guys work specifically in agriculture, and agriculture is a gigantic sector. So very important and a big challenge, that's for sure. So why don't you tell me a little bit about Indigo Ag and what the company does, where in the world or where in the country you're operating, and maybe go into a little bit more of your specific role?
Sure. So Indigo, we're a leader in sustainable agriculture, harnessing nature to sustainably feed the planet. So focused on trying to create a world that has more profitable farmers, more sustainable companies, and just overall healthier society and ecosystem. So we're trying to solve problems for farmers by, you know, optimizing yields and profitability while kind of building their soil for the future, trying to help agribusinesses by helping better serve their customers and increasing their revenue, and corporations to help them decarbonize their supply chains with carbon credits and scope 3 reduction programs. So we do that through sort of 3 different product lines. We have our biologicals. So these are, you know, soil microbial amendments. They help maximize yields in the face of different types of stress. So different environmental stresses, weather, pests, water stress, that kind of thing. We have our sustainability solutions. So we help farmers and agribusiness to easily and flexibly gain access to new revenue streams for sustainable crops and carbon credits through promoting sustainable practices that help the land keep its value and help reduce greenhouse gas emissions and build soil carbon. And then we have sort of digital efficiency type solutions. So driving transaction optimizations through our digital platforms to increase efficiency, accuracy, profitability in the crop transaction space. All of this powered by science and technology, that's really at the core of what we do. We try to design all of these programs to be farmer-centric. So we offer choice and flexibility to the farmers, allow them to have multiple options, you know, kind of within one platform. Feel that we've really pioneered a lot of this in the sustainable ag market, kind of building this ecosystem where the farmers, the agribusinesses, the corporations, the planet, like everybody's sharing the same incentives. In terms of location, so founded here in the United States, we got our corporate headquarters in Boston, commercial headquarters in Memphis, but we've got other facilities and a lot of remote staff, as most companies do. But we also operate across Brazil, Argentina, the EU, and we have a joint venture in India. So myself, I co-lead the sustainability policy and engagement team. Our team focuses on standards development, interpretation and implementation, reporting and verification in those carbon and scope 3 programs. And then we also do a lot of external engagement and advocacy, engaging with standards bodies, NGOs, industry groups, government, and various global forums. So we kind of think of our role as being translators between a wide variety of internal and external stakeholders, trying to make sure that what we're building has the highest integrity as well as the highest value for the farmers and the environment.
And it's very good timing for our conversation because I just read, I think, a week or 2 weeks ago that Indigo announced the third issuance round of your carbon credits from one of the sustainable agricultural projects. And can you first, can you define sustainable agriculture from the perspective of Indigo? And then can you go into what this project is or if there's multiple projects that are contributing to the carbon credits?
Sure. So sustainable agriculture covers a wide variety of things. And you can have, you know, there's lots of different types of agriculture, lots of different types of practices. The project that we are issuing credits on right now, US-based carbon project, incentivizing the adoption of management practices that either reduce greenhouse gas emissions or enhance soil carbon sequestration. So you could have practices that are just emission reduction, like a fertilizer reduction, or you could have practices like cover crop introduction, where you're primarily just building soil carbon. and you can have both. So we also encourage farmers to stack practices and sort of a journey that they get on it, right? This is where it's very different from industrial and energy types of projects where you just go to a facility, you install a piece of equipment, and you run it. Here, the farmers are kind of starting on this long-term process of transitioning their system. The project right now focused primarily on annual row crops, although we are expanding the scope of that rapidly over time. The typical practice changes that we see, the big ones, a lot of cover crops, whether that's introduction of cover crops on fields that have never had them before, or for fields that are currently using cover crops, if you make a big sort of extension of how long the cover crops are in the ground, that can have a big impact. You start introducing new species like legumes. Tillage reduction, tillage elimination, those are also very important. And the key here is taking a whole field view of the impacts. So accounting for the soil carbon changes, carbon dioxide, methane, nitrous oxide, all of these things are interacting with each other and changing. So that broad scope is what really makes this work and really makes it scalable. A lot of methodologies in the past were more narrow, focused on just individual practices or just one cropping system. So this U.S. project, it covers 30 states, primarily central and eastern U.S., but it's an aggregated project. So we enroll new farms over time and the project expands.
Wow, 30 states. That's quite a lot. I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you provide guidance then on the particular activities that the farmers need to engage in, or is there like a list and then they can kind of choose what makes most sense for their farm, or how does that work?
So it's a combination of information provided by Indigo. So we've built a lot of digital tools to help support farmers. Once they go into our software platform, there's, for example, a carbon calculator where they can specify where they are and the cropping system that they're growing and then try different practice changes. And it'll estimate for them the impact that they should see and what that should look like in terms of carbon revenue. On the back end, this calculator is built on the actual model runs and data collection that we've been doing over the years. We've also got, you know, cover crop decision support tools and other things like that to help the farmers. But then we also partner with agribusinesses. So this is how we're reaching most of our farmers is through this partnership model. They're enrolling in our program through generally trusted advisors that they're already working with.
Yeah.
And so they're also getting a lot of advice from those partners who are helping multiple farmers. And then after they've gone through the program, they've adopted some practices, we've gone through data collection verification, they get their payment report at the end that shows them field by field what the gains were, and we usually provide some additional feedback through that process.
Got it. And just so you know, I want to kind of paint a picture for the listener. We're saying this is one large project, but it's taking place over 30 states. And so do you have any idea of how many different farmers are enrolled currently?
Sure. So in the third verification, we had close to 1,000 different farmers that submitted data and went through verification. In terms of total enrollment, I don't know exactly how many farmers. It's around 7 million acres.
Wow.
But, you know, you can think of it like there's a process of enrolling the farm and then, you know, going through a practice change and then the data collection. So the enrollment number is going to be bigger than the number you see currently in verification. So
yeah,
the last verification was about 1.3 million acres.
Incredible. That's absolutely incredible. And mm-hmm. So this is the third issuance. So can you say how many credits were issued in this third round? And then because it's the third, how many in total?
Yep, about 163,000 came out of this third issuance, and that brought us to close to 300,000 total for the project.
That's beautiful. Love it. And so let's get into the nitty-gritty, because I think that a lot of our audience is pretty, I would say, savvy when it comes to carbon credits and methodologies and the markets in general. And so I don't know which registry or methodology specifically that you're using. So can you shed a little bit of light on that, if it's one that you guys have helped develop, or if you're using a methodology that was existing already within a registry?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So, you know, as I mentioned before, when we started this, we looked out at the existing landscape of ag carbon methodologies and found that a lot of them, again, were too narrow or not scientifically rigorous enough when it came to the soil carbon component in particular. So we ended up working with both Verra in their VCS program and the Climate Action Reserve. we authored VM42 and VMD53, which is the model guidance module that goes with VM42. Those were submitted to Vera for the VCS program, went through the independent validation process, and were adopted in late 2020. At the same time, the Climate Action Reserve launched their soil enrichment protocol development process, and we participated in that. So these two methodologies basically were created in parallel. They're different from each other in some ways, similar in most ways. So project could be designed that could work in either. And in the US, our project has been listed with the Climate Action Reserve. We do have a project based in the EU that's listed in the VCS pipeline. Earlier stage, no credits issued in that one yet. And, you know, when we look out at new projects, we evaluate both registries and you know, whichever one would work better in a particular place and particular type of project.
If we go back to the round of carbon credits that was just issued in the third round, All of those farmers are using the CAR soil enrichment protocol, or they're using the Vera VM42 methodology?
That would be the soil enrichment protocol.
Got it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So basically, that's kind of the one you guys are following for this larger project that's across 30.
That's right.
Cool. Very good. Can you get into a little bit of the detail on the pricing schemes for your projects? And what I mean by that is maybe you can provide a sense of how much of the money is actually making itself back to the farmer.
Sure. You know, so the focus for us is really maximizing the value of the credits that are generated so that we can drive as much value as possible to the farmers to get them to scale up these practices. You know, when you're looking at soil carbon sequestration in agricultural soils, it's not, you know, hundreds of tons per acre per year, right? It's a smaller number. So we need a higher price to give them a good incentive. As we announced in our most recent issuance, we've got some future buyer commitments with purchase prices in the range of $60 to $80 a ton, depending on, you know, contract length and timing of delivery and that kind of thing. So at this level of pricing, which again, still needs to get higher, but, you know, we're getting to a pretty good premium price. The buyers are recognizing the high integrity of the outcomes generated by the carbon program, as well as the unique value that the farmers are bringing through the carbon sequestration and the co-benefits. So, you know, you can have benefits to biodiversity, water retention, resilience in farming communities, and just, you know, resilience in the food supply system. Now, in terms of driving value from that price back to the farmers get 75% of the average price in each issuance round. So that 60 to 80 that I mentioned, that's basically future commitments. And, you know, we started selling credits in 2020. So the buyer's pricing has gone up over time. And then the amount of money that we're able to give back to the farmers has gone up over time. If we do have a partner, if a farmer is enrolled with us through a partner, they still get 75%. So we split that 25% with the partner. So to date, across our carbon program and our sustainable crop programs, farmers have earned more than $12 million. We're actually in the middle of making the payments right now on the third issuance.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. I mean, 60 to 80 bucks a pop is a very good price for a credit. And if they're, and then 75% split is also, that's a high incentive for a farmer.
It is. I should say, the way that we structure things with the farmers, it's a five-year contract, and there's an incentive for permanence built in through a vesting schedule of those payments. So they get a 50% payment in that first year when they sell the credits, and then it's, you know, 20, 10, 10, 10 after that. And so then the next year when they come back and do it again, they get another 50% of the second year, but then they also get that 20% of the prior year. And so you can kind of see there's this payment stacking that goes on over time and provides an incentive for the farmers to stay in the program and continue those practices. And we're trying to get them through that transition. So as you look out, you know, depending on the practice changes in the cropping system, 5 or 10 years, they're going to start to see significant non-financial benefits, additional, these other agronomic benefits that then over the long term, over the decades, once the project is done, we see them to continue those practices because they've made that transition.
I'm glad you pointed that out, because I think that that is very important for people that maybe don't really understand how this works so well, because of course you don't want the farmer to just make a change one year and then the next year go back to what they were doing before or even further down the road. And so I think structuring it that way is clever, because of course you want them to see the co-benefits that they receive that won't be immediate, but will, if sustained, will make themselves a little bit more evident down the road. So it's, I'm glad that you pointed in on that, because it's a very important element of what you're
doing. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the permanence obligation rests on Indigo. So if a farmer does leave the program, we don't claw back credits or money. We don't make them pay anything back. They may miss out on some of their unvested payments, but it's on Indigo to maintain the permanence. So in that view, we are able to view the aggregate as sort of one carbon pool that we are trying to grow over time.
And that's Indigo basically stepping up to the plate and saying, hey, we're going to shoulder the potential risk of some change down the road.
That's right.
You just mentioned that future commitments. And so I'm curious if the credits are being purchased like on the spot market. It sounds like what you're doing is that you're entering into forward purchase agreements with buyers. Can you go into that a little bit of what that looks like?
Yeah, that's the way that we've been approaching it. So not really focused on spot trade, but forward commitments. So typically when we do have a new credit issuance, the credits are all entirely spoken for already.
Yeah, obviously that helps in a lot of different ways as well for both you guys and the farmers. Maybe you can't share who the typical carbon credit buyer is, but if you can, that'd be cool. I don't know if we're talking about major corporations or medium-sized companies. If you can go into that, great. If not, I totally get it.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say most of our buyers have been public about it, either us transferring credits to them or in most cases retiring credits on their behalf. So it is possible to go into the registry and view the retirement reports, and you can see the line item retirements that we've made on behalf of our buyers. We see sort of two primary segments of buyers. Some rely on agriculture in their own supply chains, like Maple Leaf Foods or Blue Bottle Coffee. So it's not that they're using our credits as a, you know, scope three reduction, but they like having that story where they're putting their investment, you know, tied to their own sustainability goals. Another segment of buyers who operate mostly outside of agriculture, but just, you know, share our passion for scaling sustainable agriculture. So, you know, some professional services companies, JP Morgan, Barclays, Boston Consulting, Shopify, those are some examples there.
I love Blue Bottle. So I'm very happy to hear that they're one of your clients, because that coffee is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the actual carbon emissions reductions and then the verification, because I know that this is also a specific point that maybe some people get tripped up on, which is if a farmer starts the project today and you have set a baseline of what their business as usual practices look like, and then you're going to go back in a year or two and measure any sort of emissions to conclude that there was a reduction, Can you tell me what the process is? Because I assume this is falling on Indigo to go back and say, okay, emissions have been reduced or emissions were avoided because of this change. And so it would be helpful if you could lay out how you all are doing that so that the emissions reductions or avoidances are actually confirmed and verified.
Sure. So the quantification itself takes a hybrid approach that was introduced in the Soil Enrichment Protocol in VM42, where we're using both physical soil samples that help establish that initial soil carbon levels in the field, and then pairing that with biogeochemical models to quantify the baseline and project scenario soil carbon fluxes. So the model that we're using is DACENT CR, that was developed out of Colorado State University. Then we're also combining that modeling output with the additional equations from the protocol, the default equations for any greenhouse gas sources that are not being modeled by DACENT. So the results have net greenhouse gas and soil carbon changes at the aggregated project level, which can then be allocated back to the field level based on the management data that we're collecting on every field. So the DACENT model itself, there's very rigorous model calibration and validation and uncertainty guidance that we have to follow. This was one of the big innovations in these protocols was rather than specify a specific model and version of that model that everybody had to use, which would sort of lock people in and not allow any sort of innovation. You can bring your model, and it can be any model, but you have to go through this rigorous process of basically using published data sets from the literature to demonstrate that your model is performing well in the case of your project. So in what we call the domain, the crops, the practice changes, and the regions in which we're using it. So, you know, Descent can model, I don't know, something like 90 different crops, but we don't have validation data on all of those crops. So there's about 15 different crops included in the program. And through that, we're also able to quantify the uncertainty, right? The model prediction error. So this project level result is adjusted for any uncertainty that's coming out of the model, as well as coming from the soil carbon measurement. And it's also, we're monitoring for leakage. So far there hasn't been any, but we would have to also adjust down for leakage if any occurred. That would be basically if the yield is declining in the program. And, you know, then when we have this project level result and we allocate it back to the farmers, then we know exactly how much to pay each farmer based on the performance on their field. We do also go back and remeasure the soil carbon at least every 5 years. So at that point, we'll have, you know, multiple measurements over time. We'll be able to then assess the performance of the model and see whether there's any need for, you know, a recalibration.
Is there any future tech that you're kind of interested in? And what I mean is like maybe like some in situ soil sensor measurements, or are you guys implementing as well like satellite data? Because one thing that's very interesting to me in the soil carbon space is that it seems to be a lot of movement around tech in the sense of being able to rapidly and easily do these measurements and verifications. And you see, there's, you know, companies that are coming up with different ways of doing that and blending various different sorts of tech. Because you're so close to it, I'm wondering if there's any that you've seen or that you think have like really big potential to help this process, because it is obviously it's a complicated process to go and do the emissions verification and all of that mm-hmm. stuff. And so of course, the better and easier and faster we can do that, the higher that we can scale. So is there anything that you've seen that you're just like, ooh, this could be cool, or stuff that you're looking forward to?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I see a lot of stuff that I think could be cool, and we're trying to evaluate all of it. You know, again, going back to the way that the protocols are written, with this flexibility, it enables, you know, bringing these sort of new technologies. Again, it's just you have to demonstrate that they're accurate. So, you know, right now, today, we're leveraging remote sensing extensively, not for the quantification of soil carbon, but for the detection of different management events. So we're bringing in remote sensing data. We've built really powerful remote sensing algorithms that allow us to do things like boundary detection, cover crop detection, tillage detection, see what management events are happening and when. That'll also be incredibly important when you look at the future, when fields are out of the program and we need to monitor them for permanence, but we're not necessarily asking the farmer for data anymore. So that's very important. The software platform itself has been, you know, absolutely key to our success. Building this software platform where farmers can either enter their data directly themselves, or their advisors can enter data on their behalf, or they can import data from other management systems. For example, if they've got a John Deere cloud connected tractor, they can pull in that My John Deere data from the cloud. All of this in service of basically increasing the accuracy of our data while continuing to push to reduce the actual burden of entering data on the farmers. So we're trying to get that balance. Now, the soil samples we're still physically collecting out in the field, you know, 30 centimeter soil cores, sending them to a laboratory. But our science team has been evaluating different technologies, different options, things like spectroscopy. And, you know, the update to VM42 2.0, Vera introduced some guidance for the use of spectroscopy in these projects. They've also just recently announced development of a module, potentially using remote sensing for evaluation of soil carbon. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops. On our end, you know, we test these things out. We've tried different types of probes, sensors, And what we're looking for is something that can scale up across millions of acres and has acceptable levels of variance in the data. So that, you know, flows directly into the quantification of uncertainty. So you can imagine it's sort of a trade-off that we can assess. We can accept maybe a bit more variance and a bit more uncertainty in the quantification for, you know, much cheaper, faster measurement of carbon. You know, if we can take 10 times as many samples, then, you know, that's very exciting. And, you know, we're not there yet. We haven't put those things into our commercial scale project yet, but we're really excited to see how they come. We're also always evaluating other, you know, practice opportunities. So there's a lot of different things that are happening out there, biochar, rock weathering, and, you know, different grazing management approaches. And that's something that we're continually looking at to see how and when and where we can expand.
Yeah, it's always on the move, it seems like, but that's great. I mean, yeah, you nailed it. I think it's finding the balance of the scalability and the reliability, accuracy, which is not an easy balance, but it can be done. Let's circle back to the protocols. You're, of course, very familiar with this, but I'm going to kind of spell it out for the listeners, is that currently the Integrity Council for the Voluntary Carbon Market, or ICVCM, is assessing both the programs. So that would be Climate Action Reserve and VERA, as we've mentioned before. The program is the word that they use for the standards. And they're also, on the category level, they're assessing the methodologies. Both of the methodologies that you referenced, VM42 and then the Soil Enrichment Protocol at CAR, are under assessment by ICVCM. And ICVCM is putting out updates, you know, every few weeks saying how they're doing on their progress and when they assume that these assessments are going to be done. Assuming that CAR and that methodology receives, which will be the Core Carbon Principle label or the CCP label from ICVCM, how do you envision this impacting your projects and your credit prices?
Yeah, we're very aware of it. Been watching it very closely since the task force scaling voluntary carbon markets. And actually, I've participated in the multi-stakeholder working group process for the agriculture category assessment. So that was an interesting process. The stakeholder component just wrapped up and now it's off to the governing body. So hoping to hear decisions, you know, within a matter of weeks, maybe by mid to late April. You know, in my opinion, both CAR and VERA are well aligned with the program level requirements of the CCPs. And I think both VM42 and the Soil Enrichment Protocol are well aligned with the methodology level requirements of the CCPs and the assessment framework criteria. So I feel pretty good about the chances there. I think more than, you know, the effect on pricing, my hope would be that the CCP labels start to stimulate the buyers that are currently sitting on the sidelines to get in the game and start investing now in high quality credits. You know, that's the hope, is that there are people out there, corporations that are not yet putting their money in because they're nervous about, you know, quality and integrity, and that this will help send a clear market signal. I think it'll also help the farmers. They can better differentiate between different ag carbon programs, understanding which programs are going to drive higher value for their actions by having this kind of clear label and approval. Of course, hopefully it also helps prices to go up.
Yeah, but you nailed it. You hit it right on the head, which is that the ideal outcome is that it kind of restores the confidence back into the market and the methodologies and the credits themselves. And so, I mean, that's the entire initiative's concept. And so I share that optimism with you. I think that soon we will start to see some updates and hopefully it has the intended impact. So fingers crossed, but I'm feeling pretty good about it.
Yeah, I think, you know, the interesting thing is, as fast as they are moving, and they are moving quickly, it'll take time to get through all these categories. So, you know, there's funny sort of outcomes just based on the order of when they assess things and when things come out. But that is what it is. Luckily, agriculture is here near the front.
Yeah, of course. And that's a great point, because I think it's important for people to understand that. I mean, they're right now, it's 100 methodologies. That is a lot of methodologies that they're looking at, because each individual methodology is an extremely complex thing. And so we're not just talking about reviewing documents. This is like scientific investigation work that's being done. And so it is a just naturally time consuming and kind of in really in-depth process. So they are moving quick, which is great, but to give them benefit of the doubt, this is a big undertaking.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So we're almost finished, but I did want to ask you, because I saw another announcement, you guys have been in the news quite a bit, which is cool, that you have a new partnership with Watershed Marketplace. And mm-hmm. I was curious if you could elaborate on, first of all, what is Watershed and what are the services that they offer? And part two is, how is Indigo contributing to this partnership?
Yeah. So Watershed, companies use them to measure, report, and act on their emissions. So through the Watershed Marketplace, customers can access decarbonization projects that are vetted both by their internal experts, and they also have an external advisory group. These projects meet a high bar for the verification, durability, and other, you know, criteria that they look at, with the intent to ensure buyer confidence while enabling high impact climate action. So Indigo was very excited to partner with Watershed. We're providing their corporate customers access to our high integrity credits so that they can use them as part of their commitments. So it's a way for us to, you know, offer our credits up through their marketplace and for their customers to have that, you know, sort of curated selection.
Yeah, make it a little bit easier for the buyers through Watershed, basically.
Absolutely.
Cool. All right. So let's look into the future, Max. Where is Indigo going? What's on the horizon? Future projects, expansion into new territories. Obviously, you're in 30 states across the US. I think you said Brazil and some areas in Europe. What's happening in the next 12 months?
Sure. Well, we've already started on the fourth reporting period for the US Carbon Project. So this would be for the physical crops that were harvested in 2023. Farmers are just wrapped up their data collection, management data collection, and now we're launching soil sampling and the quantification. So we're usually starting the verification process somewhere around June. We're also greatly expanding our sustainable crops programs. You know, we've been growing those programs for the last 5 years or so. Separate from the carbon credits, this is where we're actually linking impact quantification with the physical crop and helping companies reduce supply chain emissions by engaging directly with those farmers. So we've been helping a number of, you know, food and feed and apparel companies over the years to sustainably source the commodities that they're using in their supply chains. In terms of expansion, we do have a joint venture in India that I mentioned, Grow Indigo. They've actually got several projects now in the VCS pipeline using VM42, working mostly with smallholder farmers there in India. So that first project has completed verification and will hopefully be issuing credits soon. So we're excited to see that happen. And then we're always evaluating new opportunities to kind of expand into new cropping systems, new geographies. So when we think about that expansion, you know, one component is the science component. We've got our science team running ongoing field trials and academic partnerships, generating the, you know, data we need for model calibration and validation. And then also on the more sort of business commercial side, always evaluating opportunities for new partnerships that can help us expand into new geographies and reach new farmers.
Brilliant. I very much look forward to news updates that involved Indigo. And so I hope to see some exciting stuff coming up that you guys are maybe breaking into new territories and expanding, because I do think that what you're doing is truly awesome. And so, and because like I said, you guys have been making a lot of waves in the news lately. So I wouldn't be surprised to see something cool coming up in the horizon. And I hope that that is what does go down. My last question, Max, I always like to close out the episode in the exact same way. Are you familiar with Stoicism?
Vaguely.
Okay. Well, I usually ask this about climate finance, but I'm going to give you, it's going to be user choice. You can apply this question I'm about to ask to climate finance, carbon markets, or ag. And so Epictetus, who is one of the legendary Stoic philosophers, once said, "What concerns me is not the way things are, but the way people think things are." And so I want to apply this idea to, what is one thing that you think must be done to change the way people think about either climate finance, carbon markets, or agriculture?
Well, you know, changing people's minds is never an easy thing. But, you know, I think the number one thing, and this would be an answer to almost any question about what should we be doing about fill in the blank climate problem, act now. So even if people aren't certain of exactly what credits to buy or exactly what the rules are and what the standards are. Like, it's always in flux. It's a changing space. And we're learning by doing, and we're making impact. So especially in terms of agriculture, it's an immediate scalable solution, but we need dollars going to farmers today to take action. But I'd say the same thing to the farmers. Act now. It seems like a confusing space to some, and maybe they're waiting to see, you know, what's coming next. They need to just get started, get moving. We're, as a climate, we're out of time, but also all of these things will evolve more rapidly if we all get involved and take action now. So I think in terms of finance, buyers, get out there, put your dollars to work. And in terms of farmers, let's get moving and help each other.
Brilliant. You nailed it. I think Epictetus would give you an A+ or a 10 out of 10 on the Act Now concept. And I agree. So awesome. Max, thank you so much for joining me. This was an awesome conversation. I appreciate you taking the time and for all of the very, very insightful information on what you guys are doing at Indigo. So thanks. And like I said, I look forward to seeing more updates in the coming months about what you guys are doing.
Thanks, Jay. Appreciate the opportunity and love the podcast.
Breaking news. A couple weeks after Max and I connected, ICVCM announced that Climate Action Reserve, which is one of the standards that Indigo Ag is registering their projects with, is now CCP eligible on the program level. Undoubtedly, this is welcome news for Max and the Indigo team, as the CCP label is a big step towards showing project integrity. VERA, the other standard that Indigo is using for their projects, as well as the specific project methodologies from both VERA and Climate Action Reserve, are all still under assessment by ICVCM. Like most in the climate finance sector, we will be keeping a very watchful eye out for updates on these assessments. Regarding today's show, I will leave some information in the show notes, as always, with links to Indigo Ag's website and their soil crediting program. Please stay tuned for another episode next month, because like the Terminator said, I'll be back. And before you exit out, I ask you to kindly take 60 seconds to subscribe and leave a review for us on either Spotify or Apple Podcasts. If you listen on Spotify, make sure to hit the little bell so you get reminders when new episodes release, because we record weekly audio versions of our newsletter Sliced, so we are often shooting off more content than just Untangling Climate Finance. I promise they'll make interesting listens for either your morning or evening commutes, or whenever you're listening to podcasts. And finally, if you want to connect, you can shoot me an email at jtiptongordianknotstrategies.com. A link to my email address is in the show notes. Thank you for your ears, and catch you next time.